T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This segment's brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56David.com. That's 56David.com.
To us talking to Kevin Fishbane.
Kevin Fishbane, Bears beat writer for The Athletic.
Can you walk us through maybe when Justin first got on your radar?
Last year, just on a phone conversation, just talking with Coach Day at Ohio State, we were going through a bunch of different players, just talking about different guys that he has. And towards the end of it, we discussed Justin, and he brought up, you know, he mentioned that, man, this kid is an absolutely, you know, he's a generational talent. And it just stuck with me, generational player. And when you hear that, those are strong words, but you understand the respect I have for him and what that means. And
Kevin Fishbane on 670 The Score.
Kevin Fishbane's on Twitter at KFishbane. He covers the Bears for The Athletic. He joins us on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. And you can see him on Twitch as well. That is twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. Fish, what's up, man?
What's going on? It's what a weird post-draft Bears recap day.
Why?
Because people are happy. I'm not used to readers and fans and people being, you know, generally pleased about what the Bears did, as opposed to, frankly, if they had traded up for Mac Jones, I think it would be a much different day today. So, well, we can kind of start there. But, like, yeah, people are excited. I'm just not used to this.
We are getting consensus, at least from media members, as to where they think Justin Fields is going to fit in as a starter come next season. I know we're going to be talking about this for months. Hub told us on Friday, he said 2022. You just released a depth chart article on The Athletic this morning. What is your estimation as to how this happens?
Well, if it's up to Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, it's 2022.
It's insane.
I said this, Dan, that, and I'm going to say this probably 100 times between now and week one, Andy Dalton is not Alex Smith. Matt Nagy is not Andy Reid. This is not the 2017 Chiefs when you look at the roster. And I remember 4 years ago, I went through, like, because we were having this discussion with Mitch. We were just saying, like, well, shouldn't Mitch start? Because by training camp, it was obvious who the better quarterback was between Mitch Trubisky and Mike Glennon. And I started going through, I'm like, all right, how much does it matter to start right away versus waiting a little bit? And the guys who started right away were almost always better and had better careers than the ones who waited and ended up starting the middle of their first year. Patrick Mahomes is the exception. Aaron Rodgers is the exception. Those teams and what those teams had when they drafted those quarterbacks are the exceptions. And the Bears want desperately to be that. But I've talked to you guys about this example earlier this offseason, is the 2012 Seahawks, right? They threw a lot of money at Matt Flynn. They draft Russell Wilson in the third round. I know it's different because it's a third round pick than a first round pick. And they let the training camp battle just go. You know, and Ryan Pace kind of alluded to the fact that they're going to be open to what happens. But the Seattle just said, let's just see what happens. And Russell Wilson was far and away the best quarterback on the team. And they let him start day one. And we've seen what's happened over the last decade there. So I think the Bears have to be flexible. They have to be open to the fact that if they're standing there at Halas Hall in early August and Dalton just looks like, frankly, Andy Dalton, Justin Fields looks like Justin Fields.
He is Andy Dalton. That's the thing. Well, who do people think Andy Dalton is other than Andy Dalton? What am I missing here?
I don't know. I don't, Dan. I think the Bears have this vision that he is going to just kind of keep them afloat. Like, I think that they feel that Andy Dalton could get them to 10-7. And that would be fine. Like, again, it's all about the 2017 Chiefs. Like, everything's going to go back to that blueprint. That's... And when I say blueprint, I mean a blueprint that is the only blueprint that has ever worked out in that way, what happened in the 2017 Chiefs.
Tell that to Allen Robinson. Tell that to Allen Robinson in his last year as a Bear. He's waited his whole damn football life to have a dynamic quarterback. You don't tell me, don't tell Kevin Fishbane, tell Allen Robinson. And or tell that to Eddie Jackson, as excited as he was. The reason we're excited is not for 2022. It's to see if he's a generational talent. And this is all true. And Matt Nagy said it. He's told he's a generational talent. Trevor Lawrence isn't going to sit. So if you got a generational talent, don't sit him.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all, Dan. I really don't. I think it's going to become really apparent, like, how much better and how much more dynamic Justin Fields is. And they keep telling that anecdote about, oh, the first time Patrick Mahomes came to the huddle, he didn't realize he needed to shout the plays out. You know, there's just so many things he needs to learn.
Because he didn't do that at Texas Tech?
Right. I think Justin Fields is going to figure it out. Like, there's a reason you trade up to draft this guy, because he's got everything you want. Like, he's going to be fine. Like, he's not, like, he can be your starting quarterback day one and you're going to be okay.
All right.
Like, yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm driving this bus in a different direction. There's one dude that we think is going to start who was drafted in this draft, and that's Tevin Jenkins. Where is he going to be on the line in your estimation?
Well, you know, if I had to guess right now, Layla, I would guess left tackle day one. I think that, you know, the left tackle, right tackle debate is not what it used to be. Like, yeah, it's not that big of a difference anymore. You know, look at Khalil Mack's rushing against right tackles, right? Like, it's, and teams have such dynamic edge rushers that it's not the biggest deal in the world anymore. But I do think that you just look at, you know, you always follow the money, right? Charles Leno has no more guaranteed money in his contract. If you find a way to cut him at some point this spring and summer, you save a ton of cap space. Jermaine Ifedi, you just guaranteed him a little over $2 million for this season. You just drafted another right tackle in the fifth round. You brought in this swing backup from Denver who could play either side. Let's put it this way. Tevin Jenkins is probably your left tackle of the future. So it kind of goes back to Justin Fields' conversation. Why don't you just make that future start right now and just put him in? I do think that Charles Leno is not as bad as fans think he is, but his salary is quite reasonable for this season, all things considered. But it's the last year of his contract. Like, I don't see a scenario that Charles Leno starts this whole season and then they re-sign him. Right. So if, like, you already know Tevin Jenkins is going to take over, you might as well just have him start it and get going to left tackle so he can understand the nuances of that side. Because we've heard switching from right to left is not the easiest thing in the world. So you might, you know, I think if you think he's your guy for the future, just start him there and have him compete with Charles Leno. And if he wins the job, he wins the job. You move on from Charles Leno. You thank him for a great career here, fine career here, solid career. And then you move on in that direction.
Any of the other names, be they the later round picks or the undrafted free agents, do you think have a potential to be material players?
Dan, the one that kind of intrigues me is the corner out of Oregon, Thomas Graham. And again, this is not somebody I knew about. You know, opted out last year. But reading the scouting reports about him, we had him as a third to fourth round guy. I know Pro Football Focus had him as, I think, a late second, early third round talent. You watch some of the film that the Senior Bowl posted and some of the stuff from Oregon, and he's got that kind of competitiveness. And I like the fact that in his scouting reports, he's a really good tackler. He's very physical. So that tells me that maybe he can handle, you know, playing inside. He can handle special teams roles. So in terms of a value pick, like, I'm not saying that guy's going to be your starting nickel, you know, week one. He's a sixth round pick. But I do think of those late round guys, when you consider the traits that he has and the position he's going to, that he could be maybe one of the better value picks, you know, looking at this years down the line, you know, just kind of speculating there. And I'm not just saying that because he said he loves talking to the media.
Fair. You said that the biggest surprise to you in this draft was Larry Borum's selection. Why?
Well, and this isn't against Larry. I think when you look at his scouting report and you talk to people about him, you say, oh, that makes sense. It's a good pick. I just was surprised they went tackle. This is a front office that has roundly ignored offensive tackle for a long time. And that fifth round pick to me was so crucial because, you know, it's your last chance really to get somebody who could be, you know, a contributor for you early. So you're looking at receiver, you're looking at corner, those positions where there's a clear opportunity for somebody to step in. Tackle, I think that, you know, like in 2022 or even this year, your starting tackles could be Tevin Jenkins and Larry Borum. And, like, you could be set for a long time. And then you'd be in great shape financially, too, when you look at the cap with those guys on rookie deals and that being a premium position. So, again, I think it could work out down the line. I just kind of was surprised that they went tackle again, knowing that they could have maybe found a receiver or a corner who could have the abilities to be a starter day one.
I have to say that regardless of how good some of these guys turn out to be, I like the preponderance of offensive selections because at least it's an awareness of the league in which they play. And it's an awareness that even when this defense was at its absolute best, they didn't win a playoff game. And knowing you got a score, that you've compiled all of these brilliant quarterbacking minds and you got everybody on the off, your coach is an offensive-minded guy, that whether or not this means that Nagy himself had more influence in the draft room or not, however it got done, they at least understand they've got to score more.
Yeah, I agree, Dan. And I was talking to somebody in the free agency period when the report came out that the Bears had talked to Kenny Galladay. And he texted me, he's like, well, it looks like the Bears are just trying to outscore everybody. I'm like, well, that works, right? If you outscore everybody,
yeah, you're
going to be in good shape. But you could kind of sense in free agency that this was the route they were going, that they realized that it's time to pour those resources into the offense. I will say at one point on Saturday, I'm thinking, kind of poor Sean Desai. You achieve your dream as being defensive coordinator. They cut your best corner in Kyle Fuller, and you're just sitting around. They didn't pick anybody for your side of the football until, you know, the sixth round. It's not like they brought in any big names for the defense. But fortunately for Sean Desai, he's inheriting a defense that has Khalil Mack, that has Eddie Jackson. It still has Akeem Hicks and Roquan Smith. Like, there's enough dudes on that side of the ball that you still can imagine that, you know, the defense is going to be fine. And you know, the hope obviously is that the change in scheme from Pagano to Desai is going to help make up for some of the difference in terms of the talent maybe not being what it was a couple years ago.
But waiting so long to draft a defensive player and draft one that is a positional need for the Bears is saying that they think they've got the guys they need in that secondary to make things work.
Yeah, Leland, if you looked at corner, like, there are guys. I mean, Duke Shelley has NFL experience. We saw it last year. You know, Kendall Vildor is somebody that they seemed pleased with those limited reps they saw the last couple of games last year. Artie Burns was somebody who was getting first-team reps before he tore his ACL last training camp. You can even go to Trey Roberson, the CFL star who picked the Bears over a lot of other offers last January and then injured his foot and was out all year. So I think that there is maybe a reliance on some of those guys. The other thing about corner is, now there's some cap stuff they got to figure out first, but remember last year, the week after the draft, they signed Tashawn Gibson. So corner to me is that position where maybe this week, as teams start to cut guys around the league, you know, you lose the compensatory formula this week. So if you add players, it doesn't count against the comp pick formula. So maybe we see corner. There are still some veterans available who can play the slot, who can play outside. Like, that to me is an obvious one that you could still add a veteran, even receiver too. Maybe even more so than getting impact guys at this stage in the game at, tackle, for example, and obviously at quarterback.
It's interesting, too, that a 3-4 defense isn't usually the rule of thumb that I was always told is they love just adding linebackers. Because that's how you fill out your special teams, and you can never have too many. You figure out where to play them, and they haven't done that yet. There usually seems to be a point where most 3-4 defenses start stockpiling guys.
Yeah, it's a good point, Dan, because I think when Vic was here, there was that emphasis on linebacker. And you know, like, certainly you see the financial resources they've poured into outside linebacker and to an extent inside linebacker with the contract they gave Danny Trevathan. But, you know, that those are positions they haven't really drafted guys at. I think they are really have to be hopeful that Travis Gibson makes a bit of a jump. Now, they did bring in Jeremiah Tashu as a number three, who's probably an upgrade over what they had last year at that position. But if Gibson is the player they think he can be, then that helps him out a lot. The best undrafted rookie so far is this guy Charles Snowden from Virginia, and he's an edge rusher, so that helps maybe there. They brought in an undrafted rookie at inside linebacker. But inside linebacker, to me, is a position I thought they could maybe add a late-round pick there because we know what they have in Josh Woods and Joel Iyebuniwe. Like, we've seen it. Those guys, Manti Te'o started over both of them in the playoff game after having spent the entire season in the practice squad. So that tells us what they kind of think about those two guys, and they're in the last year of the rookie deal. They brought in Christian Jones as the number three, which is fine. It's, you know, it's probably an upgrade over last year. I wondered if they would have brought in a rookie there just because how much longer is Danny Trevathan going to, you know, be your starter? And that could be a position to replenish. But again, this is the consequence when you trade these draft picks away is you don't have that opportunity to bring in, you know, safety is another position. They haven't drafted a safety since 2017. And they don't really needed to. You know, they've had Eddie Jackson. They've had competent guys starting next to him. They got good special teamers they keep bringing back and Deion Bush and DeAndre Houston Carson. But that's another spot where I was kind of wondering, like, you could – there's just no youth here. There's nobody in the pipeline. And there's not a whole lot of positions that have that. They did that with offensive tackle finally. They have that with quarterback now. So let's see if those work out. And they have that a little bit with running back with some of the undrafted guys.
I also like your breakdown of the running back room and how there are a lot of people vying for spots now, given also the signings that they had from undrafted free agents. How do you see all of that shaking out?
Yeah, I think Khalil Herbert might have been, you know, another kind of surprising pick just because of the position. But he was somebody that you read a scouting report, you start watching the tape, and then you keep in mind that he's a kickoff returner. You're like, okay, this makes sense. Like, you could see how he could fit, and he can be a number three, number four running back. But it is really different the way they handled that room this year. Like, usually it's just, we've got Montgomery, we've got Cohen, and we'll bring in some number three to play special teams, and we don't really need anybody else.
Well, Damian Williams, yeah.
Right, so they brought in Damian Williams, and I thought they'd be done. And then they draft Herbert. They bring in the undrafted guy from Coastal Carolina, who was incredibly productive there. They love these very short running backs, all these guys under 5'8" that can hide behind the offensive linemen. But yeah, that's a room that's going to be more competitive. And it's, you know, you always look at the draft like, all right, which veterans are going to be a little bummed when they see the draft class? Ryan Nall and Artavis Pierce are probably some of those guys. But look, Dave Montgomery's got, you know, 2 years left in his deal. Tariq Cohen's coming off a torn ACL. Damian Williams on a one-year contract. And then you go back to wide receiver, right? They didn't draft anybody till the sixth round. We don't know what's going on with Anthony Miller or Javon Wims, and you know, we haven't seen anything from Riley Ridley. So who do they have there? Well, if Tariq Cohen's going to be lined up in the slot a lot, if they're going to use Damian Williams a lot as a pass catcher, if we're going to see more two tight end formations, you know, maybe that's why they add more at running back, because they just don't have the depth at wide receiver to trot out 11 personnel 70-80% of the time.
Kevin Fishbane, great stuff as always. Thanks for your time.
All right, thanks, guys.
That is Kevin Fishbane of The Athletic. Next up, the Cubs beat writer for the Tribune, Megan Montemurro. That was an all-timer yesterday. There were some things that happened in that game that go down in Cubs lore for not just the scoring, but each team hitting five home runs for the first time since that the famous game in 79 against the Phillies. So it just an unfortunate outcome for them, sadly.
Indeed.
But she will tell us what's going on with Ian Happ and everybody else next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Hitting from the left side, three infielders to the right of second. Happ swings and hits one deep to right. Way back.
gone! Ian Happ ties up the game.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That was the good part of Ian Happ's day. The bad part was the knockout punch, where his best friend, Nico Horner, punched him in the face and knocked him out and left him lying there bleeding in the middle of center field. But we hope everything is okay. Here to talk about the ups and downs of a memorably wild day and the current embattled state of the last place Cubs is the beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune, Megan Montemurro, who is on Twitter at @M_Montemurro, and joins us on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, at apnissan.com. Megan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Your takeaways from yesterday, where you have explosive offense and, unfortunately for both teams, starting pitching still a problem and now injuries an issue.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for the Cubs, you know, that was really encouraging is that, you know, they were able to kind of match blow for blow with the Reds. You know, even though they fell behind early again, they recovered from that. It was very much a back and forth game, which, you know, afterwards David Ross said that it reminded him of a playoff intensity kind of game. So I think it's good that obviously the offense responded and was able to match the Reds, but yeah, obviously the pitching staff and mainly, you know, the rotation in that road trip, just too many times, you know, they put the offense and the team in a hole, and that's a lot to ask of the offense to constantly have to be, you know, digging out of an early deficit.
And perhaps a lot to ask out of the starting pitchers as well, when we know their makeup and we're seeing what we're seeing right now. It's not far-fetched to understand why Zach Davies has struggled. He seemed to improve on Saturday. It was a step in the right direction for him. But Trevor Williams going only 2 2/3 and giving up 6 runs, I know that that's going to be a concern moving forward if he can't turn his path around either.
Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the risks when you build a staff around, you know, pitchability and command pitchers. There is not much room for error if they're not locating their stuff. And that's been a problem with Zach Davies quite often this season. Like you said, he did look better in his last start, you know, over the weekend against the Reds. But Kyle Hendricks, very similar issues. Walks have really been a problem for the staff. And, you know, they generally don't have the kind of stuff that if you're missing your locations, that you're going to be able to still get weak contact or swing and miss stuff. I mean, you watch Adbert Alzolay's outings, and, you know, he talked after his start in Atlanta that it wasn't until, you know, late into his 6th inning outing that he really got a feel for his slider, which was kind of crazy to hear because he had been getting swings and misses with it earlier in the game, and his stuff had so much movement that he said he basically was just aiming down the middle and letting the pitch move and work on its own. And so it just really highlights what you can get away with when, you know, you have that type of movement and you have a 96-mile-an-hour fastball. You know, you can get away with a lot more stuff. And so that's been an issue when you've had this many starting pitchers off and not clicking at the same time.
The biggest starting pitching achievement yesterday was that for whatever else happens in his career, Jake Arrieta will be able to say that he caused an opposing manager to remove Amir Garrett. Like, and I'm thinking, and it worked. I know it worked, but I'm thinking, really? Like, you're making a pitching change in response to Jake Arrieta batting? I've never seen that before.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. When that happened, especially with someone with Amir Garrett stuff, it's not like, you know, Amir Garrett is some soft tosser where you worry, like, okay, maybe a pitcher of Arrieta's, you know, history who can make some contact, you know, maybe he gets lucky and you know, hits something. But Garrett has pretty good stuff, even though he struggled a bit for the start of the season. But yeah, I mean, that was pretty amazing to see in that moment. But I think it also kind of shows like how serious both sides were in wanting to win that game.
Well, and then the residual smoke with Amir Garrett that they had left on Sunday, given what happened on Saturday. We've seen the Cubs with some beef with their divisional rivals to the north. Now we're seeing it in Cincinnati. What was your impression of what you heard the players say afterward, especially Javi Baez, about that little bench is clearing dust up?
Yeah, I think the biggest point of contention was that, you know, they viewed it as taunting and not a celebration. If it had been something where he was fired up, maybe more directing it towards his teammates or the dugout or, you know, he wasn't looking at Rizzo as he was, you know, maybe trying to fire himself up, it would have come across differently. But the way that it was clearly directed towards Rizzo, that was what really kind of set everything off for Baez. And, you know, he really didn't appreciate it. David Ross didn't appreciate it. You know, afterwards he said that, you know, if he wasn't the manager and he was a player on the team, he would have been, you know, one of the first ones out there too. And so he didn't have any issue with, you know, Baez standing up for his teammates or any of the other guys going out there on the field, you know, to respond to that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in future series this year. I don't think either side, and especially the Cubs, will forget that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's good to see some emotion, but you know, it'll be interesting to see that MLB has been pretty strict with suspensions and fines for players leaving the dugout and, you know, breaking COVID protocols. You know, Wilson Contreras got a fine after he got hit by the Brewers for, you know, responding to that. So it'll be interesting to see what, if any, sort of punishment comes down on either team after what happens.
You want to check out our guest on Twitch? You can do that because Megan Montemurro is joining us on our Twitch stream right now, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. And what's the latest on Ian Happ? When will we know more about near-term prognosis?
Yeah, after the game, David Ross said that Happ was in good spirits, that he told him he was feeling okay. He wasn't sure if there would be any sort of concussion protocols that would be followed or anything like that. He hadn't gotten much more information just beyond a conversation with Happ. So I would expect, obviously, some sort of update later this afternoon when Ross talks to us before the game. But yeah, I think if he gets out of that relatively unscathed, that'd be pretty impressive, because watching that live, it looked really bad in the moment.
And then we saw a news nugget subtly hit last night when we find out that Pedro Strop reportedly has taken personal leave. And I feel like that's something, even though he signed a minor league deal with the team and then he got sent to Schaumburg, that we're seeing some, or the South Bend rather, we're seeing some sort of issue there with his availability. What are we learning about this? I know it's kind of a developing story.
Yeah, he posted on his Instagram story sometime yesterday where he was geotagged as being in the Dominican Republic. Obviously, the minor league season starts tomorrow, and, you know, in theory, he would be reporting to Iowa. He's not listed on the Iowa Cubs roster. You know, so it's hard to say exactly what will transpire from this. You know, I do think, just big picture wise, you know, it is telling that when they've made some moves over the past week or two for relievers, you know, they've called up guys that are already on the 40 man, guys that can give them length, like Justin Steele. Keegan Thompson made his MLB debut yesterday. So, you know, it's really hard for any player who's not on the 40 man to get an opportunity, especially if you have a 40 man crunch, and some tough decisions the team would have to make. So, it definitely would be tough. I think on any player, if you feel like, you know, the opportunity, it might not come anytime soon. He had a shot, and showed some good stuff when he was added to the roster when the Cubs had their COVID issues about 2 weeks ago. But obviously he hasn't been up in the big leagues since then.
It is no exaggeration to say Chris Bryant is playing some of the very best baseball of his career. He's batting .323. He's on base at a .405 clip. He is slugging .708. That is a weighted runs created plus of .192, already worth nearly two wins on the year. I mean, the isolated power of .385. He's back with a vengeance. Does this make him more likely to be a trade chip?
I mean, if the Cubs keep playing the way that they are, I mean, they need to start winning series. They've only won two all season at this point. And obviously at this rate, he's going to be their most valuable player and that most valuable asset if they do go in that direction as the trade deadline approaches. But yeah, it's been pretty amazing to see how locked in he is. And really, he just kind of attributes to how well he's seeing the ball. And you look at the numbers and he's just not really miss hitting it when he makes contact. You mentioned the isolated power numbers. He's making a lot of contact in the zone. He's a career high at that right now. And you're seeing walks. You're just seeing really complete at-bats from him, and he's finding his spots to be aggressive, which, you know, when you look at his career stats, when he's swinging at the first pitch, he has really good numbers. And then you saw yesterday, swung at the first pitch of the first two at-bats. He had a double and a home run. So, you know, I think he's really just locked in, understands what he wants to do. He has a good approach up there, and you see how good he is when he's healthy and really seeing the ball well.
I think we're also seeing a more aggressive approach out of the Cubs in general. Yesterday was a good example. It wasn't just Chris Bryant who was trying to be aggressive early in the count. I think that was fairly encouraging as well.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been more consistent in terms of their aggressiveness over the last, I'd say, week or two. And it's something that, you know, Dave Ross talked about after the game that, you know, he likes seeing that. It's something that they've been working on doing. And, you know, I think that's, it stands out because, you know, you look across the league a lot in the last couple of years, you know, you've seen a lot of teams building rosters or lineups that try and work counts and get on base through walks, and which that's all great. But if you're not putting the ball in play and getting hits, you know, you can walk as many times as you want and you're still going to struggle to score. So I think it's good that they're being more aggressive and looking for the pitch that they want to hit. Whether it's a specific zone or whatnot. And I think yesterday, as you mentioned, is a great example of what can happen when you are aggressive and find what you're looking for in that moment.
Megan Montemurro, great stuff as always. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Megan.
Megan covers the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. We have the Midday Midway coming up. I know you wanted to have a debate regarding severe weather.
Well, we got an odd headline that came across recently, like within the hour or so, I'd say.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you about something else that could be falling from the sky that is a little more scary than rain, sleet, or snow.
All right. I have a story of how sometimes you're an athlete when you're playing a video game, when you're an athlete.
That's all coming up, the Midday Midway, next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
it. The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays, 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
We started out digesting the Bears draft weekend and understanding now that unless all the scouting reports about Justin Fields are wrong, there is no good reason not to start him week one. Just like Trevor Lawrence and just like Joe Burrow or just like any number of others. Oh, we can't do that. I don't know. It'll somehow ruin him. I don't want to hear anything about Patrick Mahomes. I don't want to hear anything about what anybody else does. I've said this, and I stand firm. I don't need to see Andy Dalton. I just don't. I know what that is. These players aren't jumping up and down with excitement because they know that somehow Justin Fields is going to be the quarterback in a season from now. Stop it. Stop being stupid. Be normal. You finally have a guy. It's like, well, we have a guy. You're going to play him? No.
It's like baseball, but different, but the same.
We also talked to Kevin Fishbane about the Bears and talked to Megan Montemurro about the struggling Cubs.
The headline came out today that there's going to be a brief tornado.
No, they can't rule out a brief tornado. Don't, no. As a broadcaster now, you've got a responsibility.
No,
not to, you know.
It was just, but it was like alarming. It's from the Tribune. It says weather forecast for Monday. A brief tornado cannot be ruled out. Here, my headline is not so much the fact that there could be a tornado, although that sucks.
I don't have that here. This is National Weather Service via the CBS Chicago app.
Yes.
It just says chance of rain 90%, numerous thunderstorms developing in the afternoon, thunderstorms during the evening. I don't see possibility of a tornado, but I guess we can't rule it out.
A brief tornado cannot be ruled out.
A brief tornado.
Along with thunderstorms and hail. I ask you, what is a brief tornado? Continue with the weather discussion, Dan, but that was the setup for where you were going with yours.
Well, you also asked, when we were just in break, you said, what's the worst weather event?
Yes,
and
I did.
I think it's definitively hurricane.
I said, here it is. And this is after a really, really windy Saturday. So we'll throw that in the mix, too, just because it's annoying. What's the worst weather event? Tornado, hurricane, snowstorm, like the ones that knock you out for a while, or something else? And I said hurricane because there can be tornadoes in a hurricane, but the tornado is the most destructive.
Right, but a hurricane is just a bigger event. And like you say, there can be multiple tornadoes spawned by hurricane force winds, by the cyclonic winds of a hurricane. You can end up with tornadoes in there.
But yep. You know a hurricane's coming. With a tornado, it can happen in a blink. You have a hurricane warning for days.
You have a tornado
warning. I ain't going nowhere. I don't see no hurricane. I'm going to stay right here.
I mean, I would argue that
don't
you
take
can
away my freedoms.
Don't get me started on the generator crowd. I got a generator. I'm fine. Like, I can't even tell you how
many people.
You also
have a 2x4 sticking out of your neck.
Oh, my gosh. There was a dude who's
a dart in your neck.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. There was a, like, apparently some guy when Hurricane Harvey happened put, like, this inflatable fence around his house, and it actually worked and prevented it from flooding. That's another story. But there, yeah, generator crowd is a big crowd. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But the other problem with a hurricane is you have all these bugs afterward. Like, you have tons and tons of bugs everywhere, like mosquitoes and such. That's another story. So where are you going with this?
Tornado.
Here's where I'm going with this. Of things falling from the sky. A 21-ton chunk of space debris from a Chinese rocket launch is set to crash back to Earth in the coming days, potentially hitting an inhabited area.
What?
Beijing successfully launched the initial module for the first permanent Chinese space station last week. The module was carried into orbit by a Long March 5B rocket, which successfully detached. However, the rocket, which weighs 21 tons, is likely to crash uncontrolled back to Earth in the coming days.
Uncontrolled. That's always a good sign.
U.S. military radar has tracked the 30-meter-long rocket traveling at about 7 kilometers per second, circling the Earth every 90 minutes. A previous Long March 5B rocket launched last May last year also fell victim to uncontrolled reentry, narrowly missing the United States.
Oh, so we're just relying on luck.
Space News reported the reentry of the current rocket was impossible to predict due to the vagaries of orbital decay. Current measurements indicate the rocket could re-enter the atmosphere anywhere from New York to Wellington, New Zealand.
What? That's half the Earth.
Right, there's something. That's saying, you know, that's just where they have it now. It's most likely the debris will land in the ocean, but they say there is still a risk for inhabited areas. So let's spin the wheel. Could land anywhere. Might just be your time.
God, that's like Final Destination or something. To everybody saying like tsunami and volcano, we talked about this and we deemed those geological events, not meteorological.
Yeah, tsunami is caused by an underwater earthquake or tectonic movement of some kind. And yeah, that's not a weather event. They cause weather events, obviously.
Yes. Nerd talk. This is pretty good next. So Jesus Luzardo of the A's will be off the mound for a while because he, as they put it, thumped a table while playing a video game before a start on Saturday.
Thumped a table?
Playing a video game.
In anger? In celebration? By accident?
In anger, suppose. But you know that Bob Melvin, too cool for school, isn't going to let you know that. So here's what he said. Before the game, he was playing a video game and accidentally bumped his hand on the desk as he was playing the game. Accidentally bumped his hand. You know what happened? He rage hit that desk.
Totally.
Melvin said he came in. He was a little bit sore. His training staff checked him out. We threw him in the cage before he went out there, watched him warm up. He was comfortable pitching. My training staff was comfortable with him pitching. Then after the game, we got an x-ray. And the x-ray was conclusive. There was a hairline fracture in the pinky finger.
Oh.
Hairline fracture in the pinky. Like, he broke his hand playing a video game because he got ticked off.
Who was the Tigers reliever, hard-throwing right-hander, that hurt himself playing Guitar Hero?
Joel Zamaya.
Thank you. Wow. Nice.
Wow, that really was a good pull.
I just looked it up, knowing you were going to ask about it.
Is that a superpower?
You didn't have to admit that. But
a superpower? Did he just make one up?
I think Fernando Rodney was on the team at the same time. Joel Zumaya, yeah, had the famous Guitar Hero injury. That was my top of mind video game injury.
How do you hurt yourself playing Guitar Hero?
I don't know, maybe fell over a glass table or something.
No, I think it was just repeated motion of the strumming or the hitting of the buttons, maybe led to like a carpal tunnel situation.
Well, I do think Guitar Hero, if you play a stringed instrument, is hard because that's not how you play strings, but that's another discussion.
You ever had a video game injury?
No, I
either acute or chronic?
No, but I definitely punched a wall once when I was working on a story that I had been editing for like 4 hours and then it didn't, like the system crashed and it didn't save. And I think I partially, like, I probably had a hairline fracture in my hand.
I've had a couple of video game injuries, and this is only the ones I remember, because I played a lot of arcade games in college in the Bryan Center at Devil's Quarters. But before then, it's the Strike and Spare Bowling Alley in Highland Park. They had track and field. Love the game track and field. Well, you got to hit the buttons as fast as you possibly can to make your guy run fast. And I played the game a lot, and I got, I don't know if it was carpal tunnel or what, but I had this like a strained muscle in my left hand from playing track and field. The other one was pretty nasty, and I've heard of some of these golden tee type trackball injuries where you can like run the skin off your hand. I had a miss hit while playing golden tee and like skipped off the top of the trackball and sprained my finger against the glass.
What?
I didn't quite get enough of it. I underhit it. I hit it thin, and I sort of bumped. I skidded off the top. It's like my angle of approach into reentry wasn't quite good enough, and I skipped at the top, and I rolled my finger underneath on the glass and sprained a finger.
I feel like golden tee talk would be primo Steve-O in the bucket type of talk.
Let's set it up then.
Yeah.
Maybe get an endorsement deal.
Supposedly, like, low-rise jeans are coming back. I wonder if they're going to be white-stitched. It's all going to be a bit.
Low-rise jeans are coming. So mom jeans are out?
No, not yet. It's just, it's all 90s and early 2000s. It's coming back. I don't want to talk about it. It disturbs me.
Why?
Greatly. Because I hate most, like, I hated myself for the crap that I wore in that part of the, like, in that part of life. Like, I don't want to talk about that stuff.
Well, I guess I'm burying the lead, too. I know we only have a minute here, but I bought pants. I did something I haven't
done
in a long
time. Does that deserve
a
DJ air horn? Do we need to hype this up? Ladies and gentlemen, Dan bought pants!
I did. And you know what? They're kind of awesome. They're called they're the Old Navy hybrid pant, and they're kind of stretchy. Like, you could play golf in them. You could also wear a dress shirt with them, and nobody knows that they're actually really comfortable. I guess this is kind of like the whole Lululemon thing, and this is their knockoff version of it. They're like a dry fit material. And you don't have to like fold them on the creases or anything.
Athleisure.
Yeah, I'm kind of overexcited about them.
When was the last time you wore a dress shirt?
I can tell you the answer. It was 3 weeks ago at my nephew's virtual bar mitzvah.
I did not see that coming. I thought Dan would have said 2017.
Nope. 3 weeks ago.
All right.
My nephew's virtual bar mitzvah. We're going to talk to Matt Miller, see what he thinks of the Bears draft next on The Score.
He's pulling down his pants. Put up your pants, my man.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!